This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Real life is scarier than anything we can dream of, and we dream such frightening things. Sci-fi and Scream.
Be afraid.
Be very afraid on Joy 94.9. And welcome to Sci-fi and Scream. I'm your host this evening, episode number 22, and I also have a special guest, Robert, here this evening. Hello, Robert.
Bonne nuit.
Bon oui. Happy Horror and Space Cadets. We are 6 months old here at Sci-Fi and Scream, and tonight I will mention the fact of that, as I just have. It was on December the 5th of 2009 we came to be. Since then, we've journeyed down some overgrown paths of horror, golem monsters made of clay, American space westerns with Corey Maccabee, men with stingrays in their bellies, from steampunk to slasher babes and into the far-flung reaches of outer space. The Nostromo's discovery of an even evil alien bitch, as Ripley lovingly calls her, to the rediscovery of old-school TV sci-fi classics long since gone. We stared into the face of the serial killer called Tom Ripley and real-life killers called Jeffrey, and we talked of brains, zombie appetizers, and queer representations of sci-fi and horror on the big screen. And here we are. May the 5th.
May the 5th.
I lost it there for a moment. And
should be Bastille Day, really,
should
it?
Should be, considering what we're going to talk about this evening here on Joy on 94.9 and the only LGBTIQ full-time radio station on this great continent. And in upcoming episodes, we will spin the sounds of sci-fi and horror and discuss things of a horror nature, X and Y in sci-fi, coming up on the 26th. Males in Horror, and that's coming up in the beginning of June. And we'll also have a Doctor Who special in two parts. Okay, so yeah, welcome, Robert. As I've said, enough of that. Back to business. Now, last week we took a detour along the Appia Way, basically, discovering Dario Argento and Mario Bava, the Italian masters of horror. Now we're heading south, north, and around the bend a bit, to France, to the Champs-Élysées, to the heart of Paris, to where maybe the modern horrors of all horrors were given birth to by way of revolution, a revolution bathed in blood. And we'll also go to the picturesque French countryside and further north to Belgium and beyond. And Kaz is still away at the moment. She'll be back in a couple of weeks. Now, Robert, you're a bit of a history freak, I believe.
I have studied a little bit of history, and I think this is a very fascinating topic. And as we've been discussing over the last couple of days, it's got a lot of resonances, I suppose you could say.
Cool. So this is episode 2 of In Europe, No One Can Hear You Scream. You're listening to Sonia and Robert on Sci-Fi and Scream, only on Joy 94.9. Yes, that was La Marseillaise, and from a 1907 recording, and it probably shows there, actually.
Sounded a bit like it.
It did sound a bit old.
You got me thinking as we were playing that of that great scene in Casablanca, Rick's Cafe, when they have the anthem face-off.
Yeah, I know, it's a classic, that one. And, a lot of the actors that were in that had actually escaped the Nazi regime that appeared in that film, which was interesting, including the wonderful Robert Laurie. Now, I think the first we need to look at a category, well, three categories in European horror films. The first one, I think, would be, I've titled it, The Hills Have Eyes, or The Locals Are a Little Crazy, or as they say in French, folie. The backwaters and rural places in France are filled with inbred crazy people, like a European deliverance of sorts, but perhaps with better gastronomique, better food, maybe. A good example of that is the movie that came out in 2006 called Chitan, which means Satan. And, of course, in Belgium, Cavalari, also known as The Ordeal. But in its French translation, or Belgium translation, it actually means the Calvary. I'll talk about both of those films a bit later. And another category of thought, category number two, would be the horror is at home. And that's how in European horror and thrillers, it's the familiar landscapes or the maison or the casa and the streets that we know that can actually be hostile, and a hostile environment that creates the terror that we fear the most. For example, in the film Irreversible and, of course, Funny Games by the wonderful Austrian director Michael Haneke. The third area would be, I think, possibly would be called the supernatural, whereby there are strange things going on, but there is no real realistic reason for it. A lot of times these particular European horror films are purely the schlock horror done in almost copycat American style, very stylistically and probably more of a slasher film, but with subtitles. Perhaps they appeal more to a younger audience, I'm not sure. But there are movies like Dead in 3 Days from Denmark, Haute Tension or High Tension, again from France, Room 205, which came from Scandinavia as well, where characters get knocked off one by one. Sounds familiar. So that's just some of the categories I was thinking of while we were doing this. But we're also looking at the French extreme. And one of the Les Enfants Terribles would have to be the younger filmmaker, Gaspar Noé, born in Argentina, a French man, a filmmaker extraordinaire, born in 1963. And his first film feature would be I Stand Alone, or in its translation, it's also called In the Bowels of France, I Stand Alone. Or in French, and Robert can say this because he's been practicing very hard.
Ciel Tieur, I think, is the pronunciation.
Okay.
Refer to the online pronunciation guide on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Well, it's not on there yet, but maybe we'll put that on later. Good idea. Now, it stars the epitome of modern French or postmodern, perhaps French acting style, and that would be the method actor Philippe Nahon. He also stars very briefly in Noir's next film, which he brought out in 2002, which is Irreversible, but he only appears in that for a very short time. It's 93 minutes of existentialist pain, I think, and drama. The losses in life by a simple anti-bourgeois figure called the butcher. For he is a butcher, or in French they do call it the boucherie. What can you tell us about that film, I Stand Alone, Robert?
Well, it's, I suppose literally it is about a man who is obviously alone. His life has unravelled. It's 1980s France. Hmm. Things are basically collapsing around them. I guess the dream of the empire or empires has long gone. Most of the scenes are set in the outer suburbs of Paris, and it really is the breaking down of a man's consciousness, his views of the world, everything he feels, everything he values. And like most of Gaspar Noé's films, very violent, definitely be prepared to be shocked and amazed, both viscerally and intellectually. The butcher is a man who has suffered throughout his life. He is essentially an orphan. His mother, who he scathingly criticises throughout the movie with very strong language, but I guess being non-French speakers, for some of the audience it probably doesn't sound as bad, but his mother abandoned him and she was a collaborator.
Yes, so I Stand Alone. Robert's been talking about that film, the Gaspar Noé film. And most of the film's dialogue is in the butcher's interior monologue, which is spoken in a voiceover. And the camera is usually stationary throughout the film, but this trend is sometimes contrasted by abrupt, rapid movements of the camera. And the sudden movements are always accompanied by a loud sound effect, usually an explosive gunshot sound. I found that quite effective. And you were looking up something about why he used that technique.
I think generally Noir wants to shock the audience out of any strong identification with the fact that they are watching a movie. Part of, I suppose, the philosophy, if you want to put it that way, of his cinema is that you never get too comfortable, you will always be on edge. And once again, we can only but stress for tonight's episode that these films are quite confronting.
Yes, I need to have a disclaimer here. If you intend to see any Gaspar Noé films, and Chitane, for example, by Kim Chaperon. There are probably other films we might mention a little bit later, but I just want to say that just be careful, be aware that they are graphic. They have their point of view, and they are very French and very European in that point of view. And the language, the scenes may upset, but we will talk about that again shortly.
Yeah, I think the thing to put this into context, and this is a very good film site came across called traumafilms.com upapa, and it basically gives a little bit of an insight into, I suppose, the cultural background and even the philosophical background. It mentions a quote by the great dramatist and surrealist Antonin Artaud, who says, and I quote, "I propose a theatre whose violent physical images pulverise, mesmerise the audience sensibilities, caught in the drama as if in a vortex of higher forces." And basically goes on to say that if you replace the word theatre there for cinema, you have basically a fairly good filmic and philosophical analysis and description of the French extreme movement, which Noir is a major member of.
Sci-Fi and Scream with Sonia and special guest Robert. Tonight we're looking at, in Europe, no one can hear you scream, and we're looking particularly at French extreme films, as they're called. Some may say this is not horror, but trust me, it's horror. We'll also look at those films from Gaspar Noé, and we'll be also looking at Kim Chaperon's films and others later in the show. That was Thomas Bangalter, and he is the other half from Daft Punk, and they're the French DJ sampler extraordinaires that have been around since the mid-90s. And the first track I played earlier in the set was actually Daft Punk, and that was a track called Rolling Around and Scratching, whereas the one just finished now, it comes from the Irreversible soundtrack called OST Mix. You've been listening to Sonia and Robert so far on Sci-Fi Scream on Joy 94.9. And now we're going to the next film by Noé, the one that's caused a lot of upset in the last decade, basically. The one that had a lot and still does have the controversy surrounding it. The film Irreversible was released in 2002. Written, directed, edited and photographed by the director. It starred Monica Bellucci and Vincent Cassel. Several reviewers declared it one of the most disturbing and controversial films of that year. The film employs a non-linear narrative. And as I mentioned, the film is done by electronic musician Thomas Bangalter. He will also be doing the music for Enter the Void, which is coming up hopefully this year to be released in Australia, also by the Enfant Terrible Gaspar Noé. Now, Irreversible won the Bronze Horse Award at the Stockholm Film Festival that year, and it also competed in the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival in 2002. It won the Best Foreign Language Film in this Critics Circle of Australia. It was also voted Best Foreign Language Film by the San Diego Film Critics Society. Now, Irreversible contains 13 scenes presented in reverse chronological order. In the beginning of the film, is it actually the end? There are two men talking in a small apartment suite, and one of them is the butcher, the protagonist of Noé's first film made in 98, which was I Stand Alone. We mentioned that earlier, where he reveals he has had a sexual incestuous relationship with his daughter. But that's another story. Outside, we see the patrons milling about on the street in a nearby gay club, a gay S&M nightclub called The Rectum. It's very aptly named, and you were saying that it is actually a real place in Paris.
A gay club in Paris, which they fitted out and obviously changed the name for the purposes of filming. Mm. But it certainly is a real location.
It's a real location, yeah. Now, what we see portrayed next is a topsy-turvy world by way of camera movements spinning and turning and askew angles from upside down to side in an erratic and a seemingly chaotic style. This was all done handheld by the filmmaker himself. He did it himself. So the whole film is in reverse. The whole story is in reverse. The two men are Marcus, played by Vincent Cassel, and Pierre, played by Albert Dupontel. And they're escorted out of a nightclub by police. We're not sure why, but we see that Marcus, Vincent Cassel, is on a stretcher, apparently injured, and Pierre is in handcuffs. And we're still not really sure what's happened, but we get to that, don't we? And it's pretty horrific. It is. So, spoiler alert.
It is very horrific. As Sonia said, the film is basically done in reverse linear order. The actual subtitle of the film is Le Temps détruit tout, which means time destroys everything. And as Sonia said, Philip Nahon effectively opens the film, which is really technically the end of the film, above the nightclub, and he is actually saying some statements that I suppose in a way give a summary of some of the themes of the film. I won't read them all, but some of the more interesting ones are, he starts off with, because time destroys everything, because man is an animal, because most crimes remain unpunished, and probably the most potent one of all, because all history is written in sperm and blood, and because time reveals everything. And it's a very good opening to the film, which certainly makes you very curious as to what the hell is going on.
Yeah, you are wondering, because it's incredibly graphic and shady and sleazy club they're in called the Rectum, and you're just thinking, what is this? There's a lot of homophobia that boils to the front there, and it's quite unsettling.
There's an interesting comment that Noah has made about the criticism of homophobia, which, if you see the film,
about that, because, you know,
could possibly be justified. He actually used the motif, I suppose you could say, of male sexuality in that way, because it seemed the most extreme thing he could put on film, so he was using it for film purposes. And he is actually one of the characters in the club who is masturbating in one of the shots.
The actual director.
He explains this further on his Facebook site, which I'm not sure if it's in French or in English, but for those curious, you could refer to his Facebook site.
Okay. Well, shortly we're going to play an actual interview that we've managed to find with the wonderful Monica Bellucci, and she is explaining basically why she did this film, because there was a lot of pressure on why she would do this. And if you haven't seen the film, once you have, you'll probably think, well, you'll think, what a brave act. Or you may think the opposite. It's entirely up to you. You're listening to Robert and Sonia on Sci-Fi and Scream, only on Joy 94.9. That was Monica Bellucci giving it her best, considering the topic.
Certainly, she did give it her best. As she said, the scene in question is done in one camera. The camera doesn't move, and the purpose behind that is to make sure that the viewer is totally focused on the horror before their eyes.
And she was in charge of the whole scene.
She was.
And I think it was 6 days it took to complete it. And there is CGI, so when you do see a man's penis, it is actually not the actor's penis whatsoever. It was actually added much later in the editing room, which is interesting. So they weren't actually nude.
He was using special effects a lot of the way through.
That's great. Now, so that's Irreversible, and that's Gaspar Noé, the king of French extreme, I would say. That's what it's called now. That's what they've penned it as. And what are the director's influences? Well, of course, he's a huge fan of Stanley Kubrick. A Space Odyssey he names as one of his favourites. He also names The Honeymoon Killers by Leonard Castle, Deliverance by John Borman, Taxi Driver by Martin Scorsese, Straw Dogs, of course, by Sam Peckinpah, which had a great impact on him when he was a younger man, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre by Toby Hooper, Tetsuo by Shinya Sakamoto, whom we mentioned in some news later on, and he also was influenced by Wes Craven's original version of The Last House on the Left, Salo by Pier Pasolini, and Eraserhead, Death Wish, and others. And you've got some there too, I think.
Well, the interesting thing that he made in reference to Kubrick is that he believed that this was the film, Irreversible, that Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman should have made rather than Eyes Wide Shut. So.
Yeah, well, I might have to agree with that, I think. I was left feeling disappointed with Eyes Wide Shut as a Kubrick fan as well. It was a bit sad for me personally.
There is no accounting for taste, though, as the audience reaction shows. He actually had an interview here, and he said that in Quebec, a lesbian journalist was very nice, but she asked some weird questions. And in the article, she actually said that she found not the scene with the killing or the rape scene the disturbing part, but the heterosexual petty bourgeois vision of happiness the director shows at the end of the movie. So I guess there's no accounting for taste.
True enough. Interesting. You're listening to Robin and Sonia explore the dark, murky depths of French Extreme on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. That was Chitan, that was part of the trailer, actually, and some of the music by the DJ OST, who also did some work with Thomas Bangalter for Irreversible. And what is Chitan all about? I love saying that word because it sounds a bit like something else. Naughty. Well, it's a film by the young Kim Chaperons, and it came out in 2006. It's more gruesome in horror in its violence, but it's also more comical and tongue-in-cheek for its violence as well. It stars, again, Vincent Cassel, Roxanne Mesqueda, who's appeared in a few Catherine Brellet's films, and it has others, which Nico Lefetan, Leila Becchetti, Julie-Marie Parmentier. Unless you've seen a lot of French films, these films, or names, I should say, and actors may not mean a lot to you, but anyway, and so far, what is it about? It's based on Christmas Eve, an alternative to Christmas Eve, where a group of young guys meet two gorgeous girls at a club, of course, and they are invited to spend the weekend in the country with one of the girls, played by Roxanne Mesqueda. They meet a man called Joseph, who apparently is just the gardener or housekeeper, but he's a lot more than that, and he's played very effectively and disturbingly by Vincent Cassel, is he not?
Very much so. He just shows what a great actor he is, because he can go from the roles like Irreversible, very Parisian, very chic, to the yokel.
Yeah, the slightly, obviously, inbred yokel. Now, he's a creepy, unkempt man whose pregnant wife remains hidden in a large house, an old chateau, run-down chateau, that the young girl has invited these young people to. What begins innocently as a Christmas Eve dinner turns into a disturbing act of satanic possession and incest. Joseph's behaviour becomes increasingly erratic, and the young friends realise their host has made a pact with the devil, or Chitan, and all hell breaks loose. And as Tex Maxica from BloodyDisgusting.com says in his review of the film, the gang, made up of a trio of unruly guys from Paris, just have one thing in mind, and you can imagine what that is, how to get Eve or her friend Yasmin in bed and make nice with the crazy family groundskeeper, Joseph. As the night wears on, of course, the friends come to have their wildest dreams and greatest fears delivered in succession until the tragic reality of their purpose is made horrifyingly clear. So the title Chitan actually is a variation of Shatan from the Islamic interpretation of Satan or the devil. And two of the main characters in the film are actually Muslim. And during the dinner sequence, Joseph's tale involving Chitan or Satan's desire to have a man lay with his sister and conceive a bastard child is elaborated upon. And that's just where the oddities began. And of course, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this film, it's pretty much an alternative take on the story of the birth of Christ, I believe. It's an incest baby. Need I say more? And you've seen that too, haven't you, Robert?
Yep. It's been a while since I saw it, but I do recall it was it alternately it's horrifies and makes you laugh out loud at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's very exuberant and bloody. It really is. And it has such a wonderful soundtrack with some great French hip-hop. And it's a very très cool. That's all I can say, très cool.
Very très cool.
But we can't go amiss without mentioning another great French film, and that's Haute Tension from Alexandre Aja. I have mentioned this film briefly before. It was made in 2003. And a little bit about the director, Alexandre Aja, French film director. He rose to stardom with this film, made in 2003. He's an actual director of Sephardic Jewish origins, and his wife is a Moroccan from a Muslim background, and apparently they get on just famously. He's worked for such directors as Gregory Lavoisier, who was one of the writers in redoing The Hills Have Eyes, Mirrors 2, and Piranha 3D. Now, Haute Tension was released in 2003 in France and in 2005 in the US, and I think in 2006 here. And it certainly put this director on the horror genre map. It's a French slasher, though, but it is quite alternative in its convention. It certainly has images in there that are very disturbing, and some were edited and censored. I believe they couldn't do it in the American one. They took out some of the worst scenes. Philippe Nahon appears in there, who was in I Stand Alone and Irreversible.
His career has certainly been invigorated by these films.
He's in his 60s, and he's got that face. Mm. You just can't... It's amazing. Yeah.
An interesting fact about Nahon was that he starred in essentially the first film of Khan, which was essentially the same storyline as I Stand Alone. He wasn't paid for that, and Gus Van Sant promised him another role, and that was Irreversible, and he was paid. So there you go. It's certainly the face of him already inspires terror when you see him. It's very deadpan, and he has extremely cold blue eyes, and he certainly looks the part of a serial killer. In the actual film Haute Tension, he actually is the main protagonist, and it is like a chase scene whereby, very similar to the road movies where a chase is going on, but there is a little twist in the tale in terms of who Nahon actually is. Mm. It's not what you think.
It's not what you think. Another film I should mention is a Belgian film called Calvary, or The Ordeal. It was called, why it's been called The Ordeal in English, I have no idea. Now, it was released in 2004 and is of a Belgian origin, as I mentioned. The director is Fabrice Duwels, and it stars the wonderful Philip Nahon, who I just mentioned earlier. So he appears in that too. So we've got the story about that. You've watched that film.
Yeah, now in this film, Mark Stevens is a suave but arrogant up-and-coming pop singer who makes his living performing light pop ballads and easy-listening tunes at retirement homes and other small venues around Belgium. En route to perform a Christmas special, he wrecks his van, which doubles as his home, and during a thunderstorm is stranded deep in the woods. Lost, cold and succumbing to the elements, Mark is rescued by a local and an emaciated young man named Boris, who takes Mark to a nearby abandoned inn and deserts him there. Mark quickly discovers that the sole occupant of the inn is its former proprietor, Mr. Bartel, an amiable old man who now lives there as a hermit of sorts. Claiming to be a retired stand-up comedian, Mr. Bartel welcomes Mark to stay as long as he likes, even offering to tow and repair Mark's van as a favour and a sign of brotherhood.
Yeah. It's pretty gruesome as well what happens in that film. Bartel turns out to want to keep Mark as his little singing bird and shaves his head accordingly after gagging and binding him. Actually knocks him unconscious with his own van car battery, doesn't he? And then he dresses him up in his missing wife, who's run away for some reason. Her name is Gloria, in her clothes and gags him. When he comes to, he's getting his hair shaved. So he looks ugly to men who also live in the village. They don't seem to have any girlfriends or wives, so it's a bit disturbing.
Bit of a female drought there.
A bit of a female drought. Now it's time for sci-fi and horror news from Sci-Fi and Squeam. And first up, brains. Apparently, the zombie shuffle experienced by many undead player on Saturday the 1st of May, just gone, was a resounding success. I just wanted to open the news with that story being of a local interest in nature, and word is out that it's possible a world record shuffle will be attempted around Halloween this year. We will keep you posted on this as developments develop. And news highlights from the Australian Science Fiction Bullsheet 98 for May 2010. Sean Williams and Garth Nix have joined creative forces to create a 5-book children's series called Trouble Twisters. Said to harness some Harry Potter-style magic, the series is already sold to Australia, the United States and Britain in a cumulative deal worth approximately $1.5 million. The first book in the series will be published next year, and it's expected European publishing rights may be sold by then. And that's reported by Deborah Bogle from The Advertiser. And AussieCon recently announced the 2010 Hugo nominees. For Best Novel, the nominees are Boneshaker by Sherry Priest, The City and the City by China Melville, Julian Comstock, A Story of 22nd Century America by Robert Charles Wilson, Palimpsest by Catherine M. Valenti, Wake by Robert J. Sawyer, The Wind-Up Girl by Paolo Bacigalupi, and we've also got Best Graphic Story, includes Batman, Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader, written by Neil Gaiman. Captain Britain and M113, Volume 3, Vampire State, written by Paul Cornell. Fables, Volume 12, The Dark Ages, written by Bill Willingham, penciled by Mark Buckingham, art by Peter Gross and Andrew Pepoy, Michael Allred and David Hahn. And Girl Genius, Volume 9, Agatha Heterodyne and the Ears of the Storm, written by Kaya and Phil Foglio, art by Phil Foglio, colours by Cheyenne Wright. And Schlock Mercenary, The Longshoreman of the Apocalypse, written and illustrated by Howard Taylor. And there's also the Hugo Awards, which I'll just mention. They are actually the premier award in the science fiction genre, honouring science fiction literature and media, as well as the genre's fans. Supporting and attending members of AussieCon 4 are eligible to vote in the final round. Now, ballots may be submitted online or by paper ballot distributed in Progress Report 3. All ballots must be received by the 31st of July 2010. Okay. And the bullsheet is available online at bullsheet.sf.org.au. It's also a free monthly email through OSFBull mailing list. To join, send a blank email to osfbullsubscribe@yahoogroups.com. And now in movie news.
Transformers 3, 2011, starring Megan Fox, Shia LaBeouf, Tyrese Gibson, James Avery, Josh Duhamel, Frances McDormand, John Malkovich and Ken Jeong. Directed by Michael Bay, the opening date for that is July 1st, 2011. Very little is known about the plot for the upcoming Transformers 3. What we do know is that Michael Bay will direct it again. The screenplay is finished. Bay wrote it by throwing loose pages from the previous two movies into the air and randomly putting them together again. Just kidding. It will be filmed in six world cities across the globe. Shooting starts in Chicago on July the 4th, 2010. There will be a new Autobot that will be a Ferrari 458 Italia. In a Blu-ray special feature, Director Bay said that Transformers 3 can't really go any bigger in scale. It will obviously have shape-shifting good Autobots fighting it out with evil Decepticons. We'll keep you posted, but to be honest, we believe that when it comes to the Transformer movies, Bay just keeps on refilming the same movie over and over again, which is probably the point of sequels, we know. Anyway, the Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn, 2011, starring Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, Taylor Lautner, Ashley Green, Peter Facinelli. Director for that is to be advised, and the USA opening date is slated for 2011. A fourth Twilight Saga movie is about as inevitable as death itself, considering how much money this franchise has made thus far. However, the planned film presents a lot of challenges for Summit Entertainment, which owns the rights for all four of Stephanie Meyer's Twilight books. For starters, there is the novel's length. Meyer's 2008 novel clocks in at a whopping 756 pages. According to Variety, the studio is considering breaking the novel into two movies, like Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. There is also concerns about making a PG-13 movie out of Breaking Dawn, a tall order considering the book's complex and graphic storylines, not to mention the birth of a half-vampire, half-human baby. Watch out, any maternity ward coming near you. Anyway, filming would most likely start in Vancouver in spring 2010, expect the main cast to return. Drood is just one of the nine movie projects that IMDb.com say that director Guillermo del Toro was in development right now. The other projects include Hater, a zombie movie of sorts based on the novel by Brit writer David Moody, Frankenstein, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, The Witch's Death, The High Cost of Living, the character from Neil Gaiman's Sandman comics, and Deadman, the DC Comics superhero. When exactly Del Toro will get round to Drood, or any of the projects for that matter, is a bit of a mystery though. And of course, Del Toro should realise that directing a multi-million dollar prequel to a special effects blockbuster such as Lord of the Rings prequel, The Hobbit, is the sort of thing that will keep one quite busy and will probably result in one getting grey pubic hair, as Steven Spielberg so colourfully remarked of his experience on Jaws.
What Jaws was he thinking about? The shark?
Well,
or his first wife?
Well, I suppose, what do you call that? A trouser shark or something?
Oh,
anyway. Slated for a 2012 release, Drood will be based on a 2009 novel by Dan Simmons, an American author who made his reputation with the Hugo Award-winning Hyperion Cantos series of science fiction novels. Ironically, also a project which Hollywood has been trying to get off the ground for several years now.
I do wonder if they're trying to just, well, they're waiting for the right sort of director to come along and do it.
Well, I hope the poor author hasn't been, you know, waiting by the phone all those years for that call from the agent or whatever it is, you know.
If Del Toro gets to direct your baby, your fantasy, wow, I can't think of a better, you know, more flattering thing to happen.
He was obviously a bit too busy to handle the Twilight series, so...
Well, apparently he's moved to New Zealand and as we speak, and to get ready to make The Hobbit with Peter Jackson producing, and more than likely will be living there for 4 to 5 years. So I don't know how he's going to fit Drood in, unless, in fact, Drood will be made there as well, which is interesting.
Okay. I wonder how you could get vampire babies and sheep in the same movie. Is that possible?
He's not doing Breaking Dawn.
Isn't he?
No. But I wonder if we get Drood and a hobbit in the same scene, then you've got a continuity issue.
Yeah. With a man with grey pubic hair, perhaps.
That'll be Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, of course, or his stand-in, anyway. Anyway, Drood is similar to the Terror in the way it blends fantastical elements of the supernatural with actual historical events and people.
Because that's a book he wrote earlier, a space opera, I believe.
Really?
Terror.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Well, the next book is titled Black Hills and features a red Indian shaman. Could it be anything else? It couldn't be a housewife from Manhattan who happens to be a shaman, could it? It has to be a red Indian shaman. But anyway, we won't quibble over that. Who, in true Forrest Gump style, witnesses most of American history, starting with Custer's defeat at Little Bighorn.
Is it a box of chocolates or a box of scalps?
Who knows? It's very bloody, I'm sure.
I hope so. And we're going to call it an evening, are we not, Robert?
We are. Bonsoir.
Bonsoir. So, mon ami, it is time to leave the extreme of the French and horror and thriller and naturalism existentialism. Goodness, I had a trouble with that one. That's the end of another sci-fi and scream, and it has been jolly. Next week, we explore sci-fi and horror in the music and crazy sound scene that send the shivers down our spines with a special guest, Ross Bryant, who will be back with his expertise only on Joy. And this is the only LGBTIQ horror and sci-fi show on radio. So thank you for staying tuned. I'm Sonia, and you are...
Robert.
And this has been Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Bonsoir.
Sci-Fi and Scream was synthesized and squashed into shape by Sonia, Albert and Kaz. For more information, visit our Facebook page, Sci-Fi and Scream, or check out joy.org.au.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.